Good morning. Good morning. Yeah, I mean, it's after lunch and I got to wake you guys up. I want to first thank Marty for somehow finding me after 40 years. 38 years ago, he actually published the first article I wrote in the audio industry telling people how to get into the entertainment business. And the title of the article was, Here's the Broom. And Marty, thank you for that very much. And so this was sort of a natural to get back to. I'm going to say something that some of you may disagree with, and I don't care. 100% of security breaches, of security problems, anything that goes wrong with security is a people problem. It is not about technology. And we can argue about this later on over a glass of wine, but we know this for a fact in my industry. If you're a coder and you make a mistake, is that a technical problem? It's a human problem. Somebody doesn't reconfigure a server with access rights. That's a people problem. Somebody clicks on stupid stuff. That's a people problem. And that's why security awareness is so important. So I'm going to ask you guys a question. How many of you, and I have been network scanning all morning, are 100% sure you don't have any open shares on your computers or your mobile devices? 6 hands went up. The rest of you now are questioning your device, and you should be, because your device is not constant. It changes over time, and we're going to talk about that a little bit as well. So before we get into this, it's a little bit about me, to show you where I'm coming from. My mother was an engineer at NBC and an actress during World War II. My father worked on radar development systems and then produced and engineered some of the great albums back from the 50s and 60s. And I had a non-optional electronic education by the time I was 12, and I was able to fix TVs at 6. So I was the rich kid on the block because I made 50 cents a day fixing TVs. And back then, that was an awful lot of money. When we built things in the audio business, this is how we had to go get our parts. Couldn't go to Amazon and order something that had the Legos and the servos and the motors. You had to go build it from scratch. And the word analog may start coming into some of your minds. Of course, at high school, we had some computers, and we were playing around with those to some extent. And then high school and I didn't get along very well. Either they threw me out or I left. We're still not quite sure. AT&T wouldn't hire me because I'm colorblind, and I refused to go to work for IBM because they wanted me to look like Ross Perot. And that was not going to happen. So I went into the family business. That's all I knew. I knew recording. I knew studios. I knew how to design, and I knew how to mix records back in the day. Learned how, anybody recognize this? An old cutting lathes. I'm seeing a couple gray hairs that are going nod, nod here, and some bald heads going nod, nod. And this was the state of the art, a combination of cyber, electronic, and kinetic systems at the time. So at the same time, while I'm doing that, I'm messing around with computers, and I discovered I'm a really lousy programmer. Don't do it well. So I went into the music business and got to do some great stuff over the years, working with some tremendous people. I was based out of New York at the time when New York and LA hated each other's entertainment industry. But what I really loved doing more than anything else was live stuff, where everything could go wrong, did go wrong, but the show still had to go on. So when I evolved into security, the concept of failure did not exist for me. This is the way that I grew up. When we did TV shows back in the day, that was synchronization. That was our equipment when it worked. When it didn't work, we had to synchronize audio and video by hand. 5-second splices and concatenate 4-hour TV shows. It was horrendous, but it was all we had. And again, when NBC says it's airing at 8 o'clock on Friday, there is no choice but to deliver. So more computers, I was building studios around the country, and I had my own little mobile studio as well, which is still the thing that gave me all of the thrills. Really, really enjoyed it. And then we started automation. Anybody remember Harrison Systems? It's popular in the film industry very heavily. My wife built the first seven of them by hand. That's where I met her. Then they introduced AutoSet, a complete, total, abject failure of automation back in the day. So I got sick of the audio business. CDs were coming. They sounded like hell, so I quit. And I said, I'm going to go break my leg and go become a security expert. This is at a time when security experts did not exist. There were a half a dozen people in the country, primarily out of the National Security Agency, that had some earthly clue what they were doing, and I knew absolutely nothing. No education, no certification, but I wanted to be a security expert. So I spent many years learning the ropes and helping develop those back in the day because we were guessing about it all. Then Congress said to me, come testify. And I got known for coining the phrase electronic Pearl Harbor. It has been bastardized over the years, but the principle is still the same. And then I wrote a couple of books. One is a novel, and then one was a nonfiction version of it, which says, how bad can things get? And it was sort of a doomsday scenario that suddenly the CIA and various intelligence agencies from around the world were beating on my door at home to find out, where did you learn all these secrets? And they weren't secrets. They were things I made up that just happened to be national secrets as well that they paid hundreds of millions of dollars to develop, and I did sitting in the backyard just writing and thinking about them. So for the next several years, I did a lot of awareness work with governments, with the military organizations, training them on cyber war, cyber terrorism, how it's going to occur, how you can start be getting ready to defend yourself against these types of attacks that will be coming. Yet at the same time, I had congressmen saying to me, Mr. Schwartau, why do you really believe the bad guys are ever going to use the internet? That was the mindset we were up against in those early days. So there were many years that we did that. Then along comes Bill Clinton's, and it's called the Marsh Commission. And this was saying, critical infrastructures, they're important. What are we going to do about it? And ISACs came out of it, and we started standing up. ISACs back in 1997, with the most notable one being for financial services, for obvious reasons. And that was to bring awareness and training to the financial sectors. And then I believe there's 21 of them now, and then the work that you guys are doing, I applaud you because you have really done a great job of creating a vision that is well thought out. So my kudos to the work that you guys are all doing in this area. Then I said, all right, we're going to go to the enterprise. We're going to go to the kids. Everybody needs to care about security a lot more than they do. And so I wrote a bunch of books and kept on doing the awareness thing in various levels for different audiences. And I just finished this book, which I'm actually very proud of because it shows the mathematics behind security and how to actually build time-based security systems with mathematical proof, the same way that it was originally done back in the 1960s, but we lost our way. So I'm going to give this to you. And everybody, at the end of this talk, I want this empty. So don't click on stuff. So how do we begin making security awareness programs fail? Because I have seen them fail. You name it, I've seen it. And number one is, let's make them boring. Why do we want them boring? So nobody will pay attention. You guys are Hollywood. You know the antithesis of this. But you also probably have seen some security awareness training, whatever word you want to use for it, that is mind-numbingly awful, and you just want to stab your eyes out with that pen. Make it as boring as you can, and you're going to make sure that nothing will ever get done. Also, Hollywood knows this, never use graphics or videos. Why would you want to? Corporations say, well, it takes bandwidth. You're eating up all of our network resources. Yeah, point. If you use graphics, what's going to happen? You're going to communicate better. Yet, there are tons of awareness programs out there that are text only, more text, and they will reduce it down to 4-point text, if you ask nicely, to make sure that it becomes boring. You're not supposed to use humor. Why? Because security is a serious business. It matters to us, our privacy, the intellectual property. Security is a serious business, so we should never use humor, because if you use humor, what happens? people become open and receptive to what you're talking about. So if you want it to fail, please get rid of all of the humor that you could possibly think of. Earlier we were talking about, and listening to some of the speakers talking about compliance. Some organizations actually say, just follow the policy. Read the compliance, check that you've read it, follow policy, and that is the end of it. You want to fail, this is another excellent way to do it. The concept that Hollywood and all of the entertainment industry understands so well is the concept of show, don't tell. In our industry, there are very few security awareness efforts or communication efforts that work along that principle. They'd rather tell you how great their product is, how great their career has been, how great their achievements have been, instead of showing. They have not picked that up, and that's one of the things when Martin asked me to join out here was so exciting, was because you guys understand the concept of showing versus telling. You also never want to make it personal. You're here at work to do a job at work. You're not supposed to be doing anything from home. Therefore, we are not going to teach you anything about personal security, how to protect yourselves at home, how to help protect your kids, your family, because, well, it's not job related. On the other hand, once you get folks thinking about and acting upon and modifying their behavior to reflect it at home, on their mobile devices, the natural next step is that they're going to start bringing that behavior to the office. We know this works, and people that don't want to teach personal security or kids' safety, basic stuff, they are missing the mark absolutely. Today, we don't have people tied to the desktop the way that we used to. For those that are doing graphics in your industry and sitting behind the monitors, they still have mobile devices. Yet the majority of my industry, teaching awareness, teaching training, trying to get the people out there to buy a clue about how to behave better, do not focus on mobile devices. They still focus on desktop devices. If you want to reach your new audiences, and those new audiences are part of the millennial generation, and many of us have also adapted the technology, you have to do this all with a mobile focus. Just like when you do a production, I've seen so many programs fail because there's no guidance, no vision, no plan, no roadmap to get from point A to point B to be able to have some level of measuring success. They just want to throw everything at it and say, okay, we just spent 100 grand, so therefore, security awareness is done. And it fails. It fails absolutely. And one of the ways they do it is by saying, we're going to start huge. We're going to have this massive amount of content, and we're going to make everybody take tests, and they're going to have to watch videos and read newsletters and all of these things, and you're going to fail. You have to grow these things organically. You grow productions organically. Entertainment is done organically. Gaming is done organically, and awareness and education, opening people's brains up to new modifications for the way that you want them to modify their behavior. Can't start too big. You've got to start smaller. And you cannot start changing it up on day one. If you start making every little micromanagement change and suggestion and listen to everybody for all of them, you're going to fail. You're going to be in endless editing suites over and over and over again, water it all down, and this is another mechanism for failure. In our world, if you let corporate communications define the look and feel and the messaging of what is going on for your security awareness program, you're going to fail, because they're going to want you to use the same font, the same color, the same look and feel, the same template that they use for all of the other boring crap that they send out to employees that they generally ignore. When you're doing a program, you want to stand out differently. Just like in the entertainment industry, you want your product to be different, to be noticed, to be unique, to have some sort of compellingness to it so people will engage. Same thing with what we're trying to do here. Don't let CorpCon ruin your program. In our world, we don't let CISOs near any of the technology or production. Your world may be a little bit different than that, but when you have some CISO in New York who says, well, I took a semester of filmmaking and I really want to help, run, run. We've seen it and it destroys the product that we're trying to deliver. Then again, one of the other great ways to fail is to design it by committee. Let's get 50 people within the organization all to agree on exactly what we're going to say, how we're going to say it, the method of development, the method of delivery, and the metrics used. How successful is the output of that meeting of 50 people going to be? I will end up with pablum. You don't want to deliver pablum to your audience. You want them engaged, and you don't want a new Coke. You don't want an Edsel. You don't want Congress. You don't want this complete roadblock and a stasis where nothing gets achieved at all. One of the other problems that you have is you end up with English majors in big corporations, and they expect you to write things precisely using the King's English instead of using the language that people use on a day-to-day basis. I've seen so many where they say, you can't use gonna. You can't use doing with an apostrophe. People, that's amateur time. That's how people relate. That's how you make a bridge between what your message is and what you want them to hear. You have to speak in their language, and you guys know this as well as anybody else in the world. You got to relate to your audience. And in our world, it's exactly the same thing. The goldfish rule. 8.3 seconds is the average attention span today of a human being. You don't have long to start getting messages across. So the concepts of delivering content that is meaningful, that has security relevance, that will have an effect upon behavior, makes the challenge even greater on how to capture their attention in under 8 seconds. Once you do that, you stand a chance of getting their next 8 seconds. And then depending upon the size of the chunks of information that you're passing on to them, that is part of the battle, which goes back to the other issues that we've been talking about. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It's the three-act play. We use the three-act play. We have for thousands of years. We have it in movies. We have it in books. We have it in all forms of storytelling. However, in our security industry, we try to tell people, learn the following 47 things, and you're going to be fine. Is that going to work? No. Epic fail. Threes are part of our DNA. It's part of the human cadence system. And we need to use that as an amplifier, or in cyber war terms, force multiplier, to be able to make the effects much more palatable, and it resonates with our body's functions. The threes. Area codes have how many digits? First three digits of any phone number have how many digits? I'm just checking on you guys. You gotta get the messages concise, high level, and you're gonna take some time doing it. You can't, back to the don't start too big. Don't use triads. When we look at the world of security, many of you may be familiar with the one on the upper left, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. That's what we grew up on with the methods and models that we developed in the 1970s. But the next one on the right, SNL, we always talk about passwords, making them complex. SNL works really well in the United States, doesn't work so well in other countries, and again, you have to understand your audience. When we look at the domains of security, there's a cyber domain, there's a physical domain, and the human domain. They all have to work together. If they don't, if they are stovepipe, you will continue to fail. When we have our lives, it's not Leave It to Beaver anymore, Ward. It's not just driving to work and coming home. You've got your professional life, you've got your personal life, but somewhere in the middle that's kind of fuzzy is our mobile life. Where does it really fit in? We don't know because it's something a little different for everybody, which means that we have to address it very differently than obviously in any audience of any organization. There's three fundamental groups, your users, your executives, and your techs. and they all need similar messaging done in their language. Another way to fail is to ignore the science of learning. Neuroscience has come a long way in the last 10 years. We understand an awful lot more of how memory works, about how impressions work, and how to keep people activated, keep the brain moving. We understand this stuff, and by applying it in any sort of awareness program and/or training is the same thing that you're trying to do when you're producing any form of content for public consumption. Know your audience, and you're using the science of learning. And one industry that's doing it more than any other, perhaps, is the gaming industry. They understand it, and if you've never read the book Game Over, published in 1984, it's about how Nintendo addicted an entire generation of the world's population through gamification. That's essentially what you guys want to do. It's essentially what we want to do as well in security awareness training. Why should you use games? Because it's addictive. Everybody, who is not familiar with the Facebook dopamine effect? All right, really quickly, if you get a like, you get a microdose of dopamine. You get 10 likes, you get 10 doses of dopamine. If you have 1,000 friends and you get 300 likes, whoa, that just feels amazing. Gamification is the same thing. Making people feel good about themselves and translating that through what we know about neuroscience into semi-technical awareness training, gamification works because we're energizing those same chemical transitions in the neurons in the brain. So use what's available. Use the science that we know. And by ignoring it, well, we can't have games in the office. That's awful. Sure you can, because they're 1 minute long, 2 minutes at a time, short little psychic breaks from the day-to-day drudgery, for a trivia contest, for something that admins push out, for competition between teams or groups or offices around the world. It absolutely works. You should not use a platform. Up here, we are looking at a security awareness platform that gives all of the delivery options, all of the types of content that can be done, all the management and administration tools, and also incident reporting. Incident reporting in our world is the number one thing that we care about with any security awareness program. Do you know who to call, when to call, and how to call? Or replace the word call with contact. And by having on every single one of your users' mobile devices the ability to not only deliver content, measure their engagement, but also provide the ability to do incident reporting with one button is a game changer for the entire security awareness industry. Another way to fail is don't listen to your customers. You have an audience of 10,000 people, and 3,000 of them say, "That really sucks." Well, listen. You listen to your customers. You listen to Nielsen. You listen to your audiences now. Same thing. No difference. You're going to get some noise. You're going to get noise in the trolls and the haters out there today anyway. But inside your organization, when you're doing a program like this, listen to what they want. Ask them. You want something more for the kids? Some more for travel? Some physical, how do I behave at an airport with all my computers and I got the kids? Simple things, very simple behavioral modifications that can be done by listening to your customer. Part of any security program as well should be testing. Testing the real world. Anybody can sit there and take a test and say, "I scored 10 out of 10, I'm good," right? But when it really happens, when a phishing attack comes to their desktop, how do you know how they're going to react unless you've tested it, unless you've simulated it? You can do simulation through games as well, real-world simulations of actual events that we have all experienced in our world. Take those, gamify them, and make it part of the behavioral reactions in real situations for your users. It takes a minute, 2 minutes at a time. I'm not saying you're going to do this 10 hours a day. This is just little bits of events that are going to impinge upon them periodically that will create that organic growth and awareness. Also, there's an argument. I don't need a help desk if I make all of my users super technical. You can fix your own AV problems, can't you? Something goes wrong in your computer, you can fix it. You don't need a help desk. So we should train you to be experts. In our world, what we say is, we don't want you to be the expert. We want you to know when and how to contact the expert. Back to the incident response concept. Oh, the bosses, they don't need security awareness training. They never make mistakes. They never send off emails that shouldn't be read. Do they? I know it's a little sensitive in this industry, I know. But in our world as well, whether it's finance, healthcare, manufacturing, defense, doesn't matter. Execs typically are, per capita, the worst offenders for security events that go bad. They are the worst. They're the ones that are quick to click, and they're also the ones that are saying, it's not my fault, it must be IT's fault, why don't you go fix it, when it really was a user's fault. Technical staff, they're supposed to know all of this stuff, right? Well, no. Technical people also make massive numbers of mistakes. And by ignoring them, you're going to ignore basic security principles that should be built in to every process. We heard about that this morning. Building it into process. That's what the LA Cyber Labs are talking about doing. Building security into the process. And from our viewpoint with security awareness in your users, it's about building it into their mindset so that when they are doing their jobs, security becomes automatically part of their internal process as well. Make sure you give threats, give big orders. There's one company, I will not name it, it's a financial firm on the East Coast. And in the security awareness training that unfortunately we had to develop for them, it was on every single piece of collateral, every single piece of training, if you do not follow this, you will be terminated. On every single, oh, we finally quit. We just couldn't take it anymore. Leadership is not about bossing. Leadership is about cooperation, coopetition amongst various studios, perhaps, various industries in the financial sector. There's coopetition, there is cooperation, and there is competition. They all can coexist, and this is a failed model. Everybody should just need one security awareness training a day. You get all the vendors to come in, you give them a bunch of tchotchka and some mouse pads and some pens and a notepad, be secure. That's all they need, right? Except for the fact that in the 1870s, we learned, and this still holds up, it's called the Ebbinghaus forgetting curve. We know how long memory works. We know what is required mathematically to get people to remember things over periods of time, whether they want to be educated about it or not. The numbers are different, the approach is different, but the curves are fundamentally the same, and the math exists for all of this. People that just choose not to follow it and want to say, I'm going to give once a year is good enough, once a quarter, it's got to be event-driven by perhaps there's a security event in your industry, there's one in the financial industry, there's something with PayPal, it doesn't matter. That level of communication sensitizes people to the real-world events going on around them, whether they're part of your studio and your development issues or not, doesn't matter. So that's how to make everything fail. Couple suggestions on what to do to make them actually work. Freebies, give stuff away that has value to your audience. Is it how to protect the kids? Here's a book. Here's some pamphlets. Doesn't matter. Give stuff away and make it easy for them to do it. Any security awareness program has to be managed. It has to be designed. And it is cyclical. In the military, we call it an OODA loop. Observe, orient, decide, and act. And it's an entire process that marketing uses. I'm going to sell green furry things in New York. Well, they only want blue furry things, so I got to do the whole OODA loop and reissue blue furry things for New York and sell the green furry things in Wisconsin. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. It's a process, and it's one that you're familiar with because you do production. Same thing here. Case studies. Tons of free material out there on case studies of what works and what doesn't work. Use the resources that are out there. Newsletters are easy to do, easy to distribute, And if done properly, they're not going to have 7,000 words per page. They're going to be more the way that information is consumed these days, more infographically oriented with fast bullet points. Get through it, because people are not reading the way they used to, especially some of the younger generation. The cheat sheets, I actually love these, because the best place to put these is where you have a captive audience. And where is everybody's captive audience? The bathroom stalls. Use them. I gotta read this thing, oh shit. Posters, you guys know how to do posters. I've seen several of them for a couple movies over the years, right? Activity books, it helps with not only the adults, but kids love them, and they become part of the process of making it a familial, personal issue as well as a business issue. We talked about the gamification and bringing it on. There's tons of games that are being developed in our world for this explicit purpose. Videos, of course, are the short and sweet. You do not want 40-minute long videos that describe how to use a password. Well, you get the point. They gotta be engaging. I don't have to educate you on that. Have fun with all of this stuff. Meme it up. We created these just because it was fun after that most famous guy who was at Dos Equis, I guess it was. And we had some fun with this for a while. Ultimately, we're really talking about trying to have some fun and communicate a very simple message to people. We don't want them to be security experts, but ultimately, you do want to use cats. The internet loves cats. Security Cat is an awesome, awesome training tool that we've just had a lot of fun doing. And by the way, they are all free. We're not making any money on them because the staff just loves building them, and they're great. So that is the high-level view that I took away from coming from the entertainment industry, ending up in the security industry, and then ending up sort of back into the entertainment, media development, and content development industry through security awareness and from the military all the way through what I'm doing these days. And I'm here to help. I'm here to have conversations. Wherever I can, I'd be more than willing to give you the hardcore New York truth that comes out of my mouth. And with that, thank you very much, and I'm here to answer any questions you might have. Questions, comments, responses. The PowerPoint will be available through Marty's group. Thoughts, comments? Yes, it is a people. It's 100%. 100%. It's often sad, and CEOs are often reluctant in the private sector to say, well, I trust my insiders. Well, what do you mean by trust? Do any of you trust your spouse with your life 100%? Show of hands. There is a degradation because we can always come up with an exception to the rule. When you have trusted employees, you hate to think that they would violate you. I think somebody mentioned earlier that a couple of these leaks they think had come out from internal, whether it was intentional or accidental and stupid, the effect is the same. It's still a people problem, regardless if your insider is hostile with nefarious means or just an idiot who clicked on stupid stuff. So it is absolutely a people problem. Anything else? All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.